Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty, it's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty,
it's time to get this party started.
You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started.
It's the booty booty.
It's time to get this party started.
With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
Andy, Jimmy, JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to Footy Prime the Broadcast, a broad perspective of all things footy. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
My door's open. Should I close it?
No, it's okay.
Good. It's nice ambiance.
Yeah, which we can't see because Rian just panned over to it and then came back.
Better than my ambiance.
Well, I mean, I think it's apropos. It's what you do, right? We have the backdrop of
my pap light.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay. It is the broadcast after all.
I should sign up for that. It's been a while.
Oh, boy. No. Does one sign up for that? You just make the appointment?
Well, that's what I mean. I haven't had a physical in a while.
Well, in BC, fun medical fact, we've gone to like primary HPV screening, which is even better than pap. So you can actually like order it and you can do it yourself at home.
Can you explain that to everybody?
Well, I mean, the vast majority of cervical cancers are caused by HPV. So what we've switched to now is just screening for the scary HPV strains. And you can actually do it with a self-swab at home. And then we don't have to do it more than every 5 years if it's negative. So
that's awesome.
Order it in the mail, I think.
To the UK?
Yeah. What's that?
To the UK?
No. Yeah. I was assuming you were still in BC. So
I'll go home for a visit.
Yeah.
There you go, for a visit in quotes. But Footy Prime, the broadcast, not only bringing you topical conversation about women's football, but also bringing you PSAs about women's health.
The cervical health.
Yes, but also if you don't have that in your province, go get a pap test, right?
Yes, please.
Very important. Yes.
Just get your cervix screened in whatever way your province funds.
Broadening your horizons one speculum at a time.
I blame Claire for that.
Wide open. Had to take it. No. Mm-mm. Okay. How are you guys doing? It's good to see you. I feel like I haven't talked to you in a while. Yeah. You good?
Yeah, good. I'm definitely enjoying, busy in a good way, and excited about some of the stuff going on with Project 8 back home. So, yeah, it's been a fun, busy little time.
How about you, Claire?
Same. Well, work is busy and sometimes not in the most fun way. But when you were like, let's do a broadcast, I was like, did I miss a game that happened? And I just missed it. That's where I went with work.
No, not really. I mean, I don't mean to say it's not really around important games, because Champions League semifinal second legs happening tomorrow. There have been friendlies that have been announced. There's lots of news happening in club form, which we'll dive into. But no, you were right to think, hang on, have I missed something? But no, I just figured it was time to get together and have a good chat. But Rian, circling back to you, I wanted to find out, like, you had two massive wins against Kosovo and Croatia, scoring 10 goals and conceding none. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about your time in camp and getting a chance to have a sustained period of time with the players and your experience so far with the Welsh women's national team.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. It was a really great start. I think it's always challenging to come into any new environment for the players and the coach. It's sort of accelerated in international play because you essentially have 3 days with them and then you have a UEFA qualifying game. So how much are you trying to deliver? How much are you trying to change? And for the players, we've all been players. Like, change is not fun. It's really not. So they were great, I'd have to say. I think they are on a mission to make history in Wales. They've never qualified for a major event. So for me to fly in and just sort of appear, I think that I have to recognize I'm showing up right at sort of the last lap of a very long journey for them, and pretty impressive group of women I'm really excited to work with, but also proud to work with, because they are making history in their homeland in Wales. And I'm really inspired by them.
Yeah. And I mean, all those goals, I mean, and important individual milestone for Jess Fishlock, who is kind of the, I don't mean to say token, but I mean the most recognizable, I think, player on that team, 150 appearances. Like, that's pretty remarkable.
No, it is. And I think, Sophie Ingle as well, who is the captain who gave up her armband during the camp, like, pretty amazing moment. Talking about a selfless thing to have done. And Jess as well, like, 150 caps for Wales is like 200 plus for a Canadian, because they just don't have as many opportunities to play within the FIFA windows. I think a lot of our caps, one of my caps was against North Korea in the backyard of a hotel in Italy, you know, like these sort of caps that we accrued, you know. Some of them were not official, meaningful games, and most of the Welsh ones are. So it really is a testament to her longevity and how proud she is to be from Wales, because she never turns an opportunity down. And she's been in Seattle for 11 years. I mean, that flight is no joke. Mm-hmm. It is a huge commitment. And I do think a lesser person player or someone who wasn't prioritizing their international career, you know, into their 30s, would have skipped a few. And she never does. It's a testament to her for sure.
I want to dive into more of your Welsh experience as manager, but can you take us back to that game against or that match against North Korea? Because, like, I think, you know, for Canadians, I don't think you realize really what other countries have at their disposal in terms of facilities. And I got the chance to stay at a number of hotels where you would look out your window and you would look upon like four pristine pitches that the hotel just happened to have. And it wasn't associated with the National Association or anything like that. So maybe just talk a little bit about that experience. But then also maybe, because one of the games that you played, I don't know if it was Kosovo or Croatia, you played at Wrexham, right? So I want to know if you maybe bumped into any famous people.
Well, first, I think we could all probably tell a hilarious story about at least one of our caps, if not many, many. I mean, I always remember that one because it was such a milestone moment for me. And they even did a banner or a pennant or something. They tried to make it a big deal, but we were in residency in Italy, just outside Rome. That's a whole other discussion. And then North Korea showed up and they were under sort of lock and key in some sort of wing of the hotel. And then they just showed up for a game in the backyard. And then before the game, someone gave me a pennant. It was pretty funny, I have to say.
It was a milestone for you in terms of caps for the national team?
Yeah, I think it was my 100th cap.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, that's great 100th cap story.
It could have been my 150 too. Like, I'm trying to remember, but it was one of those that they felt like they needed to have a pennant. It's kind of, it's bittersweet. I see the preparations you know, I work for the FA. I've worked in the NOS. I've worked in organizations where there's celebrations for milestones, and you're looking at it and you're like, that is so kind. Like, they're getting watches or like beautiful pieces of art. I remember Randy Hermes's 100th was in Cyprus, and we bought her a tourist platter in the souvenir shop down the road. Like, we actually tried to, there was nothing, you know?
I don't want to be correcting you here. No, mine was in Cyprus. Oh, Randy's was in France.
Shoot, was it you?
Yes. Was it yours? We got Green Square.
Oh, that?
That's right.
We just said, my kid says, the shit word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad.
But you're right, though. I think I have the in behind me. Can you guys see that little orange pennant?
It's not the platter?
No, but I do have a platter upstairs. And I appreciated that because it was from you guys. You guys went out, my teammates, to get me something to kind of not make amends, but to bolster the recognition, because we didn't really get anything.
I think for you, we went to a glass door, Ames, mm-hmm. for you. Yeah. It wasn't the souvenir shop, yours. I think we tried to go get like a nice piece of art because of the Cypress Cup. And a lot of those milestones were happening. But it all came out of the pocket of the players because there wasn't anything from the association. So it was really nice to see Jess. She didn't have her 150th in Wales. So I look forward to seeing the sort of home celebrations for that. It's pretty special to see how the game has changed now.
Wait, Amy, was your 100th, was that like the 2008 Cyprus Cup? Like, I was at that one, I think.
2009.
I was going to say, you owe me money.
Because 2009 was Marachi.
Yep.
It was
Carolina.
I think you guys went back. Oh.
We were there for like 10 years, Claire.
Well, all I remember of the Cyprus Cup was in 2008, and Tank, we drove to we had like our day off, and they drove us in a bus to some like feast, and Tank playing the tourist, the tour guide. I have like that, you know, those times in your life where you laughed so hard, you think you might like not ever recover. And I was like tears streaming down my face. She was just hysterical. I remember that. And it was just like, she had the entire bus in stitches. That's all. I mean, that was my memory from the Cyprus Cup, but clearly that was the wrong Cyprus Cup. So.
Well, we hired someone to be a tour guide, and she took the mic from her and did it herself.
I thought she was taking the piss out of a tour guide you guys had previously.
No, we never did another tour. But the tour guide was having a great time as well. It was like,
because she did it on the way back. The way there, then Tank did it on the way back. It was,
I think it was Meat Hat, if you don't remember. Like,
what's that?
I'm sorry, what? Meat Hat?
Meat Hat, Carnival.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. I clearly was not on this trip. I think I'd had refracture surgery.
Would have taken.
And I was still recovering. Oh, yeah. I would have had a field day with Meat Hat.
No, Amy, you weren't there.
I know. Yeah, I wasn't. In 2008.
Brazil, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 2008 leading up to the Olympics. You were there.
Blocked
it out.
Yeah, I have. But Claire, I wanted to go back to like Rian's story about playing North Korea in the backyard of a hotel. And like, I think about, I can't remember the game associated, but we were in Germany somewhere, and this like unreal fields outside the back of the hotel, or was attached to the hotel. Do you have any trips or any memories like that where you just exposed to this unbelievable standard that was just commonplace for wherever we were?
Yeah, I had a similar one with Germany when I was traveling when I was a teenager. Like, I was, or I think maybe I was just 20, and I went to a camp prior to a senior camp, but went to an under 20 camp as like the like veteran player. When Ian Bridge was coaching, I know I missed the penalty. That's why I'm mocking him.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it was when Ian Bridge was coaching that crew. And, it was like a hotel in Germany with incredible football fields for just just cause, like, that's just the way it was. And I mean, I think like we all had those, I think it was another camp in Italy where there was the same thing, but that was pre-Marachi, and similar, like a youth camp. And then, I mean, I remember a lot of bad facilities. I think the thing that struck me the most, I think I've told this story before, but when I was in Melbourne for the World Cup, is not even just the, like, soccer is like the fifth favorite sport there. Mm-hmm. And the amount of just sporting infrastructure in Melbourne, the city of Melbourne alone, was incredible. To a degree that just, like, you don't see that in any cities in Canada. Like, there's probably more sporting infrastructure in that one city than there is in Canada. Like, it was, I mean, I'm probably exaggerating, but I mean, the facilities around where the soccer field was and the cricket stadium and the tennis facility there, and, you know, every park has, like, grass tennis courts, and just, I know there's a climate component to that too, but, I think there's just some places that do sporting infrastructure really well. And a lot of the European cities that we visited when we were playing did that really, really well. I think that until we develop that level of infrastructure, it's going to be really difficult to kind of get the level of, like, grassroots development that we need.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's what was interesting, though, just to latch on to something you said there about soccer being so far down the pecking order in a place like Australia, and the way that they embrace the Matildas throughout that run. And you saw the people in the stands wearing the Mary Fowler little stretchy gloves, and you saw little boys, little girls alike, grown men donning, you know, jerseys. They weren't wearing Socceroos jerseys, which is a ridiculous name anyway. They were wearing Matildas jerseys. So, and then long may that continue. And I think that's what you see, you know, Canada hosting, it's not the Women's World Cup, but the Men's World Cup in 26, and the potential around the development that we have. And I don't think we can take that for granted. And you have to really hit the mark so that you're developing your, what you're talking about, Claire, the grassroots in the right way, and that you're promoting the women's game, that you're giving the funding and the attention to Project 8, which is kicking off next year. And maybe we'll use this to seg into that, Rian. You mentioned that off the top. So what are you, I mean, there were recent announcements and there will be some forthcoming, but what excites you the most about what's upcoming for Project 8?
I think, honestly, it's as simple as the reality of it. Just all of us have been waiting for so long for something to take off and to be a possibility for our young people in Canada. You know, I keep talking about Wales. Wales, population of 3 million, has a league. And they have a league where not many girls, young girls, are playing yet. I mean, it's a huge mandate of mine to try and get out in the communities and get girls playing. Well, Canada is the second most registered country in the world, you know, and we've just waited so, so long. And how many of us know friends, people we grew up with, who have had to stop playing in their early 20s because there's nowhere. So it's just the fact that possibility is right around the corner that just makes me excited and very, very proud of Diana Matheson and that crew.
And I got a chance to be at the record-breaking, or assist part of that record-breaking crowd at the Bell Centre last weekend when PWHL Toronto came and played Montreal, and to see the ovations for the players, just to see the reception that was given, that potential is there for this fan base that is not the same fan base that you have for these other traditional male-dominated sports. And I think Project 8 has the opportunity to kind of continue to ride that momentum and carve out different sectors of the population that have remained untapped in this country. And we thought we'd get it 10 years ago, or if not longer, and it's not still not come. And so to see that come to fruition, I think the detractor said with PWHL, okay, they've got the eyeballs, they've got the support early on, but it's going to tail off. And it's done the opposite. It's only kept growing. So I think that's heartening for everybody who's waiting for this to happen for the soccer sphere. Yeah. What's your take on it, Claire?
No, I mean, I think we're seeing it in women's basketball now too, right? Mm-hmm. It's so funny how, like, the people don't watch women's sports crowd, like, they're excuses for things like for successes are the same across sports, right? Like, you know, tickets being free, tickets being cheap, it'll tail off. It's just because of like a couple of play, like just all of, it's all the same excuses and they're running out of them, quite frankly. And I think just, I mean, we talk more on kind of that small scale level about women's football specifically, but just seeing that it, like from a women's sports perspective as a whole, it just feels like things, it feels good to see things changing, and it really does feel like things are changing, and it really does feel like investment is being made in potential, you know, on a smaller scale, but like it feels like investment's being made and people are willing to start putting money into it. And that's, you know, it feels like we're maybe at like a bit of a tipping point for a lot of women's sports, which is great.
Yeah. What I like too, I think you sort of just touched on it, is Jaina Heffer to the PWHL, how brave they were to make changes.
Yeah.
To do things slightly differently. And I think you're talking about detractors. Whatever you prove, they're going to find something different. Like trying to get these people on board is such a, just a waste of time.
That's great for them though, you know?
But this is something they always hear, like you're ruining the game or blah, 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 blah. And now you see the NHL, you see men's leagues looking at what women have been brave enough to do, like some of the rule changes that have just made the game a little different, a little exciting, something different. I'm not saying that we need to change all the rules. I'm just saying that the bravery of that league to go out on a limb and to like to jump all in. I've just got my Montreal PWH t-shirt just arrived. So I think that's what we're seeing. And I hope it's the same for soccer, is it doesn't matter what the sport, it's opportunity to support women getting to play at home in front of their home fans and be celebrated as they should be, which is, really exciting that that's happening for soccer next year.
Yeah, for sure. Because I was in attendance, as I mentioned, and sitting there flanked by my three kids, two boys and a girl. And you think, oh, it's for all the little girls, for all the little girls. But it's for the boys as well. And we've talked about this before. So like for my oldest, Jack, who's 14, and then the twins are 9, soon to be 10. It normalizes the fact that, they've seen strong women their whole lives, right? But now they get to see these same strong women or other strong women being able to play their sport as their livelihood, to play it professionally. And that is just a usual thing. And it goes back to what I was saying about the Matildas, and to see that strength on display, to see the skill, to appreciate it in a different way is just part of their everyday. And yeah. I'm getting emotional talking about it, but it's for the little girls so that they can have that dream. They can aspire to be that professional athlete. But it's also to see in equal measure for those young boys to know that that is just the standard, that this should be available to both men and women or person to play the sport that they love and to be able to make money doing it.
Do you think you're emotional about it as well? Because all three of us would have probably grown up saying, I want to play professional soccer. And I had a brother. I know you did as well, Amy. And I don't know if you had a mean sister, Claire, but like that reality of like, there's, you can't play soccer, you're a girl. And then all of a sudden you're with your two boys and your daughter, and she's seeing a reality for herself, and her brothers are seeing one for her as well.
I think my experience was more like, I didn't really recognize I was good at it. I kind of knew I was, but not really. But like for me, the thought of the women's national team, the women's national soccer team existing, I didn't even know it existed. It never crossed my mind that it existed until I was 14. Like that was the first time. And I made my first national team 2 years later. Like it never crossed my mind that it existed. And I was talking to my dad about something, and he said, like, credit to my parents, he said, yeah, one day maybe you'll play for the national team. And that was the first time I was like, that's a thing. Like I had no idea that it existed. And now I'm like, I mean, Amy, you talk about like two boys and a girl. I mean, like I've got one boy, and we're raising this kind of generation of kids who now can watch this stuff on TV. Like they can, and I, you know, I make a conscious effort to put this, put women's sports on TV, but like there's more, you can do it now. Like you couldn't do it before. It didn't, you couldn't find it. It's still hard to find, but like we're kind of raising this generation of kids that not only like, not only do like girls see the opportunities that they can strive towards, but boys just don't really see, like there's no difference. It's just, there's men's hockey and there's women's hockey. Which one is on tonight? Right? Like it feels good that is changing. But yeah, didn't know the national team existed until I was 14.
I think to be fair, that's because you were so isolated on Salt Spring Island.
There's that too.
Just for context, but I remember, I mean, you're that much younger than I am, so there's no really good reason that you didn't know about it when you were 14. But I found out about the national team in a similar way, where I read about it in the local paper that Connie and Maureen Kant, kind of pioneers and part of the initial stages, like the first iteration of the Canadian women's national team, two sisters. And ironically, my first cap was shared with my sister, Cindy, from our same hometown, that were on this team. I was like, that's possible. That's a thing. So that's what this current generation is getting a taste of, but in a professional realm, which is unbelievable. And so like when we play soccer on like the front lawn, the back garden, whatever it is, you pick a team, right? So my kids are Canada, or they're CF Montreal, or whatever it is, right? Or maybe they're Barcelona, or they're PSG, or they're picking the latest club that's kind of the flavor of the month. But now they have a chance to do it. And if I ask them what player they are, frequently my son Campbell he might say Christine Sinclair, he might say Jesse Fleming as a young boy, which would have been unheard of like a decade ago. I mean, that's very anecdotal, that's my own experience, but I think like more and more that is the opportunity offered to this next generation.
Yeah, I mean, my kid felt comfortable enough to critique Christine Sinclair in the middle of December. So, like, that's where we are. My 7-year-old feels he knows that much about soccer.
I love that.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm hopeful, and I'm hopeful that Project 8 will be successful. And, I think like, I mean, they're just, a lot of credit really has to go into all the work that's been put in behind the scenes, because these things don't just like happen. I think he's done a great job so far. So yeah, I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah. I think it's just the beginning, and credit to this person here that we're staring at, Rian Wilkinson, who put together you put in a shift and you put together a tremendous amount of work to in the pipeline and setting up the landscape and the ecosystem in order for Project 8 to thrive as what's going to be the top of the pyramid, but for how all of those moving parts fit together. And you spearheaded all that, Rian. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Not quite true, but appreciate it. A lot of people and a lot of former players involving themselves, which is also the beauty of the game. Like we talked about supporting the hockey and, you know, like all across this board, it's been great seeing so many former players as well. Just mucking in to make sure it happens and gets it over the line, which is great. Yeah.
I love how this conversation kind of moved organically into that, which is always the best part. Like I prepare a rundown and James Sharman says the same thing over on the regular Footy Prime podcast. The best chats come out of something that wasn't written down on the rundown. But to go back,
you have like a plan for these things?
Yes, I know it doesn't always sound like it, Claire Rustin.
I do. I thought we were just shooting shit.
I just make it sound off the cuff, you know.
I was like, man, she really like thinks of things that I don't think of.
No, that's credit to you guys, all the these great tangents that we go on. But I just wanted to put a bow on the Welsh discussion there, Rian, and your time with the Wales national team. Do you have any new Welsh words that you'd like to regale us with, or there was a Rian Cam as well. So I wanted to know if from the stuff that you saw on social media, did you have a favorite touchline outburst? I mean, then there was all positive. They were all kind of, you were exhilarated and you were celebrating. But was there a favorite one that you had?
I did. Well, I don't usually look at it, but I was sent that so many times that
you
I did
liar.
See it. Oh my God, I can't. But no, none of them. I think it's really hard to for me to not even in my regular life, I'm often in trouble by my facial expressions and my reactions to things. So when on television at an exciting soccer game, I'm done for. There's nothing I can do about it.
It's the best. We frequently, Rian, will send each other via Instagram, and it's usually Schitt's Creek. Right. And it's when your face is your face is having trouble masking what you're actually thinking. And like, those are my absolute favorite because I have a terrible poker face. And Rian, we share that.
Yeah.
But it's great to see, like, long may it continue. It's wonderful to see. You're so well spoken in all of the media and the pressers and things like that. But it's so great to see you come through in all your glory on that touchline. I mean, that's going to bring eyeballs too. It's wonderful.
Yeah, there's something playing on the sideline.
I hope they're like tailoring your clothes well enough to give you some like range of motion though.
Yes, we talked about that, Rian. Did you have enough?
Worried about you in your suit jacket
and lacing your arms up?
Yeah, I got it at Joe Fresh. It's been reinforced because I did start breaking the seam, so I had to bring it into a tailor.
Okay, no, you shouldn't reinforce it. You should just like let
rip it.
Broken.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, you're like the end of the
my
game.
My one jacket.
This is how many stitches she needs.
Listen, okay. You two are used to your TV punditry outfits. I've got the one jacket. I'm not.
Maybe there were Aritzia queens at the World Cup.
That's right. And then charging it to DSN. Maybe go up a size, though, and give you a little bit more freedom of movement.
Yeah.
No, I'm not buying a new one. That one's still holding up.
Or just like rip it off, like Hulk it off at some point.
No. Oh. No, I like it.
Okay. Well,
I have, as long as it doesn't turn into the Chris Farley, the fat guy in a little coat. Like, you don't want to go down.
Food is good, but I don't need you to be giving me subtle hints like that. Jesus.
I wasn't saying that. Okay, and last thing, favorite new Welsh kind of turn of phrase or words that you've found that you love that you maybe are using on a daily basis?
Well, I think just like diolch is thank you. Diolch yn fawr. I like that. Thanks a lot. It's just such a simple one, but it's I really like it.
Not Corinne diolch. No.
No.
That's not what we're saying.
No. Different thing. Diolch.
Diolch.
Yeah. Diolch. And so our next.
Mean again?
Thanks. And diolch yn fawr is thanks very much. And then our next game, yeah. Next home game is coming up, next window against Ukraine, and it's being played in Senesi. Senesi.
Senesi.
Double L. Senesi.
Ooh, I like the time I've been in Wales, I went to a double L town and I still, Llangollen? Was that close?
Well,
it's in Llangollen.
Okay, well, I don't know all the towns then. Slan sounds very.
I know everything about Wales by now, Rian.
I'm still working on it. There's lots of slang. It's popular.
It's part of the slang. Part of the slang.
No, it's not slang. It's part of their. It's part of their alphabet.
I know.
What are you going for there?
Trying to be funny.
Slan Nechli. Slanesli. You try it, eh? Slanesli.
Slanesli.
Sure.
And what was it? Was thanks again. Diach.
Diach. Yeah.
Diach. Okay, yeah. Perfect. And then to that, and you said the next window you're playing Ukraine. So is that's sort of in the short term? And then is that the lone game in that window?
Yeah, we have a home and away, obviously, with the war in Ukraine. We're playing them in Poznan in Poland. And then the next window in July, we've got Croatia away and Kosovo at home. So those are – it's a really complicated UEFA qualifying. So we've got our group games, and then you have to come first, second, potentially third in your group. And then you play play a playoff home and away against another team from League B rather.
Okay.
And then you play the winner of a playoff between League A and League C. Oh
my, and you're currently League A?
No, we're League B.
You're League B. Okay.
So we kind of have one of the hardest run-ins. Well, actually, League C does, because their first game, like they're playing League A. We're the top teams. We moved down to League B at the end of last year. Wales did. So it's just tough because our first playoff is actually against someone from our same league. It's not like you're playing down. It's hard because there's a huge variation in team in League B as well. It's really the top teams in Europe are top, top, top. And then it kind of goes down quite a ways, and then it really falls off just with funding and misogyny.
Right. Yes.
In med school, there's this thing called the Krebs cycle that they force us all to learn.
Oh, I know the Krebs cycle from organic chem.
This sounds like the Krebs cycle of like women's soccer, trying to figure out these qualification schemes. Like I remember when they came up with the new CONCACAF thing and I was like, wow, you need like a 4-page chart to figure out how you qualify for anything.
They sent me like a movie.
Was it 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea?
Yeah, they just sent me a movie.
You need like Ryan Gosling to like Big Short explain it to you.
I mean, it's complicated, but I mean, it is what it is. It's what the players as well. It's like we have what's in front of us, and you know, Kosovo is a time. You know, Ukraine is a much bigger country population wise, but they have obviously massive political conflicts right now. And then the same with Croatia. Similar histories with Kosovo as well. So we've done some work, and I've tried to sort of give little backgrounds to the players because we're in Pristina, we're in Kosovo. And like you two, I've grown up hearing about Kosovo, you know, the war, it's still not recognized by like 98 countries. I mean, it's a pretty interesting time to be traveling in some parts of Europe. So it's about the games. It's also this, I'm hoping to continue to get the staff and players across some of the history of these places. It's pretty immense.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
Before we move on, because I want to talk about the Women's Champions League, and I want to talk about these two friendlies just announced for Canada playing a doubleheader send-off series against Mexico prior to Paris 2024. But the makeup of your team, Rian, now, is it in flux? Is it pretty well balanced between veterans and youth? And what does their club environment look like? You mentioned the Welsh setup in terms of a pro league for women. Are any of them playing in that league, or do they mostly toil elsewhere in Europe and in other leagues worldwide?
Yeah, no, so none of the – I think one of the players that we have, Flora Sullivan, is the goalkeeper and plays still part-time, has a full-time job as well. So the variation between the players is huge in terms of their realities. The Adran League, which is the Welsh league, none of the players are really in it, but it's more of this development league. And the top players go to WSL and championship clubs, which is the league right under the WSL. Mm-hmm. We have three players currently playing for the Seattle Reign in the NWSL. But it's a team that has an amazing senior group that have gone through so much together. But they are at the upper age range where people start considering retirement, and then there's quite a large youth movement coming through. There's not so many in the middle, so I think the average age of the team is probably 29, around 29-30.
Okay,
so this is an older team, experienced team. They've got over 1,000 caps or something. It's crazy how many caps they have. So I mean, this is what I mean about a privilege. Like, these players, a senior group, has just seen it all. Right. I think they only got their name on the back of their jersey 5 years ago or something. I mean, just we lived through that time mm-hmm. in Canada as well, that when that change happened, and they're just so clear on what a qualification will do. It's going to be everything for the country, right? Like, all those young girls who still don't have platforms to play, who still don't have anywhere to play, like this could be the catalyst for so much. So they're so driven, but it's definitely a team that has a big youth movement coming through. And a lot of those players play in the championship or in WSL clubs. And then this senior group, and they're playing for the Man U's, the Chelsea's, and then the Seattle Reign, like the top teams. So there's quite a variation with the opportunities and the age of the team.
And in terms of funding, does the FA fund both national teams equally? And do you stand, if you're able to qualify for next summer's Euros, do you stand to inherit a windfall? Is there any financial perk for qualification?
You know, I'm just arrived and I'm still getting across some of these things. I know the team is very clear on trying to make sure that they're compensated appropriately. And, mm-hmm. So I don't want to say anything out of turn. I think that's the only thing I could say. The FAW, from my experience from working with them, has been supportive of me since I've come in. I haven't, obviously these are also my employers, but I haven't had any issues, and we have flew a chartered flight to Kosovo, and you know, these are things where I was like, this is amazing. And it was the first chartered flight I've ever been on. I think people couldn't believe, because they do often fly chartered to more complicated places to go to, because you've got a home and away, like you've got to get there ASAP. And a lot of times commercial flights don't operate, or yeah, you have to have a layover. But I don't think they could believe that being Canadian, you know, the level that we've played at, but also sort of, that's not true. We have a chartered flight in Portland for the finals of the championship. So I have had one other chartered flight, but I thought like things like that were so incomprehensible to us, mm-hmm. as we were coming through. And so stuff like that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
We had one chartered flight. Oh man, but we had to share it.
Yes, Claire, it was the Gold Cup in 2000.
And they made us wear the suits, and the Americans kept making fun of us.
Those effing suits, I swear to God.
We walked down the hall, like Karina LeBlanc walked down the aisle, and one of the American players grabbed us and said, "Excuse me, ma'am, can I get a Coke?" Do you remember the powder blue, like high-waisted pleated pantsuits?
Yep, sure do. Oh. It was, they were kind of, not capri length, but like shorter before it was stylish, and tapered again before it was stylish. And they also gave us, they were tailors. We went in for measurements, so it should have been a very precise and flattering fit. Instead, it had like the side zip or the back zip, and then a gap where you would have like, I believe the word is gunt. Also fupa, you know, you have that kind of loose kind of skin or like fat below your belly button, which none of us had, being in pretty good, pretty decent shape, right? Pretty good Nick playing for the national team.
And I always had it.
It was your fault. This extra material, high-waisted pants, like it made no sense. They were awful.
No, and as I was like 17 or something and wearing this, like, I've never worn a suit before. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And they gave us the suits, and they went through all this trouble to like tailor them, but didn't give us a shirt for underneath. So we were all wearing like dry fit, like Adidas white t-shirts underneath.
Just awful.
Do you remember the Pan Ams that we got? We had these outfits, Amy. I think it must have been in Rio. Mm-hmm. And we had these, we were tailored as well. And we had to wear skirts to the closing ceremonies or something. Little skirts.
I also blocked this out. I remember the white blazers. Yeah. That was part of the Canadian team stuff.
The underneath was a tan skirt. Mine was a size 16, and they tailored us. So we ended up having to tie it on me with the jacket.
Okay, this I remember.
We have so many pictures of like two of us in my pants, my skirt. And I was measured.
Well, two of us in my pants, the Reed Wilkinson Chronicles.
Oh my God.
That's my fault. That's on me.
Did you guys see the new Olympic stuff come out?
Yes.
And I was like, were you guys channeling 2008? Because that was not notably well reviewed. Like, what is happening?
I agree with you. I'm glad that you pointed that out because a lot of the motif and how busy it was made me think of our closing ceremony garb that we wore in Beijing.
Yeah, the pants. I was
behind you, Anne.
And the little like, remember the cropped opening ceremony? Yes, there you go. Amy's wearing them. Show us the picture, Amy.
I'm not wearing them. Oh, yeah.
In the picture,
I am. Well, this is not a visual medium, so somebody can describe. I'm showing the picture of me standing back to back with Yao Ming. But yeah, they're like very, I mean, they're almost abstract, right? Like it's red and gold and white pattern, but it's very, very busy.
And as like the worst dressed at the like, remember the opening ceremonies outfits? Like I do. The parachute material, kind of short crop, short sleeve jacket thing.
Did you say short crotch or short cropped?
Short and cropped mean the same thing, sort of, but like I should have said one. But it's sort of cropped, short sleeved parachute jacket. It's the same freaking pattern. I'm like, guys.
No original ideas anymore, right? In anything, whether it's Hollywood and movies and remakes, style, it's cyclical. It's coming back. We're that old, really, is what I'm saying.
It was never in style. That's the point. Yeah. It's not like it was fashionable at the time and now it's retro cool. It's like it was panned at the time. Why are we doing it again?
Right. Yeah. A strange thing to revisit. Okay. Anyway. Quickly, because I don't know where the time has gone. I wanted to get your thoughts here. So Canada Soccer announced two friendlies versus Mexico. So June 1st will be at Stade Saputo in Montreal and June 4th, BMO Field in Toronto. And they tease it with a playful video, rock, paper, scissors contest between Evelyn Vienne and Kaylin Sheridan, which I loved. But it'll be important preparation for them, right? Before Paris 2024. And then potentially room for one more friendly in July. What are your thoughts on the opponent? Is this what this team needs, two games against Mexico?
Yeah, I mean, Mexico didn't qualify, right? So they're sort of not exactly in peak preparation times. They've had some fairly impressive results recently. So I think it's a good, I think it's good. I mean, I get the impulse to not want to book matches against, like, you don't want to have a doubleheader against Spain and potentially lose both, right? Like, I think I think it's important to have a competitive match where, like, you know, hopefully you win or at least put some goals away because that's what they really need to do. I don't think it's going to be easy though. I mean, which I think from a preparation standpoint is good. I kind of wonder it. I'm still just not really clear on like what the plan is. I think we talked about this the last time, like what's the plan going to be? And I think these are the games where we will probably see it, with respect to, you know, personnel and what they're going, you know, what cubic zirconia formation they might choose. But I think we'll get a much more clear picture of what the plan is going to be for the Olympic Games at this upcoming series.
Yeah, because not to discount this opponent, because I've seen like, you know, this is not a top tier opponent, but they also handed the U.S. their first loss on home soil in 20 years or something ridiculous. Yeah, that was great to see. But Rian, from a coaching standpoint those two matches for Bev, she's looking to solidify her approach as she leads into Paris, right?
Yeah, look, Mexico is the easy opponent. So essentially, the travel for the players is minimized. And she doesn't want to take anyone to Europe. The European teams that are not in the Olympics are in qualifiers during this window. So she had limited opportunities about who to play. I would have liked to have seen her play a different South American opposition just to give her different types of challenges. And Mexico is a good game. I'm not disparaging that. I'm just saying we play them a lot. So
with respect to the South American, like as Amy mentioned, there might be another game, right? And isn't that sort of the idea to potentially get a South American opponent?
Potentially. And then I would have liked to see an African opposition there.
Oh, I see.
But I mean, Bev probably wanted that too. So I think there's a good chance one of those games, whether it's one of these two or the next one, we see a disjointed Canadian team, because I think it's also a last chance to try things, and she needs to. So yes, we'll start seeing things coming together, but there's very likely going to be a game where we see a lot of confusion, disjointed, last chance for some players to show what they've got, as what I predict. But I would say that two games at home is great. Montreal doesn't often get games. Toronto mm-hmm. does. That's rare. Is it, you said?
Yep. Yeah. And both places showed out last time. The last time they were at BMO Field is when they mm-hmm. clinched their berth to Paris in that second game against Jamaica. And then they played Brazil in Montreal in the fall. So the good news, though, with this announced opponent is that it's not Brazil. Right?
Yeah. No, for sure. I think like Canadian soccer must be like pretty flush with money, though. Aren't we going after like Jose Mourinho and Frank Lampard and
Solskjaer?
Apparently meetings with Jesse Marsh happening as well.
Super. So, I mean, definitely probably chartered flights in the women's games future. And so then maybe it'll be easier to play different types of opposition much more easily.
Yeah, exactly. And so, Rian, did you get a chance? Did you see any of those performances in the She Believes Cup?
Yeah, I watched most of them. I think it's as Claire mentioned, it's fantastic. You really do get access to most things now in NWSL, WSL, sort of international tournaments and games. So yeah, enjoyed watching those mostly.
Mm-hmm. And interesting things happening too. And yet your old club, Portland Thorns, they kind of shift things around. They lateral move for Mike Norris, right? He moves over to technical director and Rob Gale comes in as head coach, and they're able to get their first win. And Sinky gets her first goal. I think the first player to score in an 11 consecutive seasons.
Every season.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Right. Which is unbelievable. So continues to break records, even though she's retired from the international game. And Jessie Fleming involved. Janine Becky gets that goal to kill the game. So Canadian players in good club form, which is exciting. There was Canadian on Canadian violence in Portugal as Mimi Alidou's Benfica bested Olivia Smith's Sporting CP. So they were both issued yellow cards, and Mimi kind of pulled Olivia down in a shoving match when they stood up. But it'll be good to see good to see her in good form and then back into the national team fold. But then we have more Canadians in action tomorrow for the second leg of the United Women's Champions League semifinal, Chelsea against Barcelona. And then Vanessa Gill will be playing with Lyon against PSG. So if Chelsea's able to win tomorrow, which would be difficult against the holders in Barca, even though they took the first leg 1-0, we might see the current Chelsea manager in Emma Hayes against the rumored future manager of Chelsea and Sonia Bonpastor for Lyon in the final. So I don't know if you guys want to talk about the Canadians involved, because the last match, that first leg, Buchanan and Lawrence were in great form. They had excellent matches for Chelsea.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I always come up with these like, you know, big statements like Canada's success depends on this, but the Ashley Lawrence in that match needs to be the Ashley Lawrence at the Olympics. And part of that is making sure that, you know, she on a like personal level performs well, but it also depends, I think, on kind of Bev's choices and how to use her. She was really influential and had a big impact on the game, Buchanan as well. But I think we've started to see Buchanan kind of more and more fill the role that she needs to fill the Canadian team. But I think finding that Ashley Lawrence for the national team is very important for Canada moving into the Olympic Games.
Yeah, because Lawrence effectively neutralized Graham Hansen.
Yeah.
In that channel. So they have to do that. It was a defensive masterclass, I think by Chelsea. But how do you think, Rian, about those Canadian players, or what do you think about those Canadian players that we mentioned and how they'll influence Canada's success perhaps in these friendlies as we ramp up to Paris?
Well, just the conversation is so exciting. Like just hearing about where they all are and what they're doing right now. I think Jessie's working her way into sort of the NWSL systems, and that hasn't been easy for her. Seeing Janine back and scoring has been great. I just think the NWSL is filled with Canadians, Portugal. And yeah, you know, I think Keish started really well with Chelsea and then fell off. As in, I mean, that's the reality when she's playing in France. I don't think they had to play super strong opposition that regularly. So it's great to see her on the up. And I think Ashley thrives when she's given really clear direction. And she was in that game, like you called it, neutralize. You know, they're one of their biggest threats. I don't see Chelsea beating Barcelona. But I think it'd be good for soccer if they do, just to bring in a different final. And then you just touched on something, but I think it's going to be so interesting the next 4 years, 3 years, to have a French coach in England and to have an English coach take over the US team. Buckle up.
I know. That's what I was going to say.
That's such a great point.
Yeah.
To see what happens there. And I was going to ask you about it. And I believe I called the UEFA Women's Champions League the United Women's Champions League. I don't know why I did that, but I did. But yeah,
recovered.
Of course, that's what the U stands for. But what do you think, Ree? Because we're seeing, we're Liverpool fans. So we're seeing Liverpool kind of falter as we get to the end of the season here. It's perhaps.
As they do.
Race now between City and Arsenal, and them wanting so desperately to do it for Klopp, and then Chelsea perhaps, you know, on the women's side, wanting so desperately to do that for Hayes and like give her that jewel in her crown. The only thing that she's not been able to win at Chelsea is the Women's Champions League. So do you see them being able to do it? And then what do you think is, you know, next for the U.S. women's national team with Hayes at the helm? Because you're starting to see things shift a little bit under her philosophy, like having meetings with Twyla Kilgore, and you can see that shift kind of happening. So what do you think is next for them? But then maybe first bit just about Chelsea with Hayes leaving.
Yeah, I think Emma is a well-liked coach, but I don't think they're doing it for her. I think that this is a group of players that have played for Chelsea for a long time, and it's a jewel in their own crowns as well, which is kind of what you want. Like,
yeah, of course.
But I just don't. Yeah, I don't see it happening. I hope I'm wrong, so I'll just say that. I do think like the all for the coach mentality, or like that, not mentality, that kind of like tagline is just wrong. Like coaches are important parts of something, but they're not the part, and it can't ever be. So I think that
it's a singular motivation, right? It can't just be that.
It's too emotive. Like, I think Arsenal's going to choke as well, and they get like that as well. Like, it's almost like teams like Man City are machines, because it is just like, it is ingrained habit. It's not an emotive moment, you know, it's because something goes wrong, everything derails. I think what I'm really interested in is the U.S. has had such a challenging couple of years with some of the investigations that have happened, and some of a lot of what's happened there. And it has resulted in a very strong, and it's happened for a long time in the U.S., especially the U.S. national team, is very, very strong player voices that have often led to very important change. The CBA is world leading for women's football, soccer. And a lot of countries have followed what they put in motion, including Canada. And as someone who helped, right, you know, do this in Canada and help support it happening in the US, I think like these are amazing moments. Emma Hayes will have none of it. And what I mean is that player driven opinion on what should happen next will not be tolerated. And I know a lot about how she works, and she's a top coach. I do not mean this disparagingly, but in a lot of European soccer, it's still the case that you go to work and you get told what you're going to be doing and you get about it. Then there's not much time for like extra communication about your feelings, about how you're doing. Like, I'm not saying it shouldn't be there. The sports psych we know is so important, but I think it's going to be a rocky start, but also potentially exactly what they need, because even though the players say it all the time, we just want to play, they also are very used to having opinion and say in decisions that are happening. And it's almost a go-to for coaches to like go to the players and say, what do you think? Because they think it's buy-in. And it is partially, but it's also just giving a lot of power to the team. And it's got to be a balance there. And so they'll come to that. I really do think, but I do think it'll be quite a big change for the U.S. right from the get-go. As will it be for a French coach coming to England, by the way, that there's just a different culture there as well. And I'm speaking as a Canadian now in Wales. Mm-hmm. You cannot pretend my mother's Welsh. You know, I do connect with my Welsh history, but in no way am I Welsh. I'm not what these women are. Like, there's a difference there. And no matter how small it is, it's always a bit of a second for balance to be found again. So it was going to be an interesting few years.
Yeah. I mean, interesting is the word. I want to go back to something. So it'll be interesting to see how the U.S. reacts to it not so much being a democracy anymore. And it's very much going to be a little bit more of a dictatorship. But as you said, it's finding that balance on that spectrum, right, where she's going to really be calling the shots. But I want to know your perspective on a French coach coming to England. So what is the reckoning going to be there? Like, what's the clash of ideals in those two worlds?
Yeah, I just want to go back. Dictatorship is a pretty strong word. I think like that
These
is
are my how- words. This is my assessment. So perhaps you'll correct me where I went wrong there.
Yeah, no, I think what I mean is the players will have a voice. They're going to have their leadership group. They're going to do all that's the same. It's more, you know, all of us had Evan Pellerud. Do you remember how we were told if you were on the starting lineup?
It was
in the meeting.
Pre-game, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes the night before.
Yeah, occasionally.
Usually game day meeting.
Mm-hmm. Right. And maybe one or two players had a meeting with him, but I can't really remember that. And honestly, just that was that. And that's the kind of what I'm talking about is, you know, I don't think Emma has a ton of meetings with the players about like until she has to. And she's got a great team around her that will do that. So I just mean that there's a separation between the coach and the players that isn't maybe seen that much in the U.S. right now, because almost coaches are trying to connect with the players so that they can speak with them and not against them. Because as soon as there's a disconnect there, the coach goes, and that's a reality. So you try and get closer to the players to try and get alignment in language and in everything. Anyway, I just think there's going to be a bigger distance between the players and the coach. The French system is, versus a huge language barrier.
Yep.
Which is challenging. I've had Italian, you've had Italian coaches. We had a Norwegian coach who spoke pretty good English, but even then there was definitely a few things.
Deanna, good ID.
Good ID.
He would yell my name from the sidelines, but it sounded like clear. So I was like, okay, we'll clear the ball. And he's like yelling it over and over and over again. And it's like, he just couldn't kind of get around the eight.
Right. Well, that is someone who spoke pretty fluent English. So now,
yeah.
So now we're talking about someone who speaks English, absolutely, but is French. I think she speaks English. I just don't want to say that she doesn't.
Mm-hmm. But a mother tongue being French, that makes a difference. Yep.
And look, Amy and I are from Quebec. We're not French from France, from Quebec. It's just different. Mm-hmm. You can tell in how people communicate when someone's from a different culture, and that will take some getting used to in how you communicate information and how it's delivered, but also what's said, the systems in place. And you know, Lyon is a phenomenal team that's been top of the women's football world for a long time. And Chelsea is a really strong team as well, but they have a lot of competition in the WSL. So it'll be a... Mm-hmm. It'll be tough to start, I think. A hard act to follow, Emma Hayes.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite Evan Pellerud pronunciation problems had to do with Amy.
Oh.
It was when I came back, we were in China, I think, and he was tearing a strip off of us in the hallway. We had like a hallway meeting. I don't know if you remember this. We were all sitting in the hallway. And he was tearing a strip off of us. He would substitute V's and W's accidentally. Mm-hmm. He was like, Walsh, you have to have vision. And I just saw your shoulders go like this. And I was like, oh no, oh no, we're all, and we just, like, everyone just lost it. And he's looking at us, like, kind of angry. And then he's like, what? What did I say?
And was I blamed for that?
No, he found the humor in it. I remember him kind of, like, he broke down and kind of laughed at it, too. But it was just...
Not, it's not lack of, but okay, so this is Evan again in different culture. We had a whole meeting where we watched the entire game, and during it, he kept a tally of log moments.
Oh my God.
Lack of guts.
Lack of guts. This was this not in Brazil? This is in Pan Am Games.
I'm just saying, like, these are just the moments. There's like harsh, like it was a joke at the time, but like that kind of coaching would not happen now. And I think Sinky got one off kickoff because she didn't slide tackle the person on the ball. I had a record number of logs. He'd never seen anything like it before. but you know, like things like that it's in some places, things, hard meetings in a hallway. I definitely remember getting ripped into in like hallways and like him making us sit on the field at halftime once because he was unhappy and shouldn't go to the locker. Like,
after we got destroyed by the Americans before the Olympics and we weren't allowed to go shower, we had to go straight into the meal room and eat. And then we watched the entire game there. It was like, 10 o'clock at night. We were like, I remember I was like cold because I was still sweaty.
That's also, we were taken to task by the goalkeeper coach for our coffee trips. And he said that we weren't focused on our personal preparation and we weren't hydrated enough because we were drinking too much coffee.
But there's
some approaches that are, you know, generational and rather archaic and they're best left in the past. But I think it's a really fascinating discussion, Rian, the points that you brought up about Emma Hayes and this different approach and different mindset that is not necessarily good or bad. It's just different. It doesn't mean that it's not player-centric. It's just very much driven by Emma Hayes and her personality and her own unique approach.
And the staff around her. I think it's really important to highlight. We're not, and you know, these coaches are not archaic. They're proven successful, and I'm hugely in awe of both and follow both of their careers. This does not mean criticism. We're talking with our player hat on.
Yep.
Any new coach is hard. When it's a coach from a different culture, it's just another thing. And Emma, and they have good people around them too. I don't think we can discount that because I think those people make a big difference in that as well.
And we know that the U.S. has a crap ton. Wales FAA almost swore there, caught myself, of money to give them those type of resources to make sure that they have all of those people, those staff members, to be shoring up all those different areas to make sure that they're well supported. And we know that going out and to get Emma Hayes was a knee-jerk reaction, but something they need to do after their worst ever showing at a Women's World Cup, right? But I mean, we know they're still in good stead, the U.S. Women's National Team, right? But this will just be something else that will sort of ratchet up that performance on the world stage. Claire, just before we go, is there anything that you're doing in particular to prepare yourself? Because you're going to be on the call for CBC. Like, are you watching these games more closely? Are you watching certain players or following different?
Yeah, I go back and rewatch, in particular the Canada games, because it's remarkably difficult sometimes to get footage on certain teams. I kind of go back and rewatch some of the stuff. And with a lot of the streaming platforms now, that's a little bit more accessible. Watching games is the main thing that I do to kind of get ready for it. Once rosters come out, I kind of do a bit of a deeper dive into some of the players I don't know as well. But that won't happen for another couple of months. And, you know, I can make some assumptions about certain teams and certain players, but those are the players I know. So, it's more just about watching as many games as I can. I want to take a little turn here and just, like, I know we joke about how we play Brazil a lot, but my career overlapped very briefly with the tail end of that kind of dynasty American crew with Mia Hamm and Michelle Akers. I think I only ever played against them once before they retired, and then kind of also briefly overlapped with the Chinese kind of dynasty team.
Sun Wen.
Yeah, and then caught the early stage of Homari Sawa's career, and So, but like the people we've talked a lot about Christine, because I mean, she and I are the same age and we talk a lot about her career. Cause like, she's one of the few players who is just those like generation defining players that actually overlapped with my generation. I just wanted to just give a little shout out to Marta, who was another one of those generation defining players who recently announced that, you know, the Olympics is probably going to be her last, international, tournament. And I think we all saw that coming, right? After commenting on that Australia was her last World Cup. I mean, I expected her to probably be done after the Olympics. But just another player that had such a significant impact on the culture of women's football in Brazil and was a very iconic player for them and just destroyed me on the field so many times. So it's always like a very kind of, it's one of those humbling experiences where you're like, that was pretty cool. And I just wanted to kind of like say that, I mean, as much as we talked so much about Christine and how much all three of us admire her and admire what she did for women's soccer, not just in Canada, but globally. And I think Marta had a similar effect, in Brazil. It's kind of like a shame to see two big stalwarts of the game kind of go. It makes me feel really old. But two kind of iconic players, exiting the international stage within, a short period of time. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to Marta.
Yep. And continuing to be extremely relevant at a club level as well. I think she just scored a milestone goal in NWSL for the Orlando Pride. Yeah. So, you know, continuing to make herself relevant and continue to be a quality player at club level, which is what Christine is doing as well.
Yeah, and continuing to, you know, the same as Christine, like pushing her teammates to be better, not just as players, but as individuals and demanding more of her federation. And I think, I just wanted to mention Marta because she's rad. And in the Under-19 World Cup, she made me look like a traffic cone. So.
I think she put up a sick number of goals against us as well when we were down at those Pan Am games in Brazil. Yeah. Part of a humbling that we took
7-0.
Versus nice. Brazil. And I think with only like 13 players available because there were so many injuries and players were overtrained, it was not a great time for us in the program's history. But
that's
from
the worst feeling too when, you know, when they like, what was the score at halftime in that game? Do you remember?
A lot to little.
No. Yeah. Americana.
And you know, when you like, you know, this game's done and you still have to play an entire other half.
No, there's nothing worse.
The ball went over my foot in that game, rolled over it. And I remember being like, I cannot get it. I was so tired.
Yeah. Words. It's just like, is there a mercy rule? Like, we're not coming back here. This isn't getting better.
No. No,
I feel that way with some games against the Americans, just like, well, please, just make it end.
Don't hurt us.
Yeah. Right. Well, from mercy rules and honoring legends of the game to starting the show off with a PSA, that's what you get here on Footy Prime, the broadcast. So keep broadening your horizons. Reen, was there anything that you wanted to let us know about that's upcoming for you in Wales, or you said it already with the next match against Kosovo? Yeah.
No, Ukraine.
Ukraine.
So, yeah. So. Yeah, well, come watch.
United women's football.
That's right.
Make sure.
Wait, what was the Diach? Diach for listening.
Diach.
Diach.
Seriously though, cheers for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us, and hopefully our Canadians put in a shift tomorrow in the UEFA Women's Champions League. And we might see a clash of Canadians in a final. That would be great. Chelsea versus Lille. We will see. But keep broadening your horizons. Cheers for listening.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG. And visit WeAreFootyPrime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Bye.
Bye. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.